Welcome to the NCO Journal's Sergeant Stein Podcast, a series featuring informal conversations with leaders at all levels. I'm your host, Shago Zapata, Managing Editor of the NCO Journal, and with us is Sergeant First Class Osvaldo Aquite, NCOIC of the NCO Journal, and Staff Sergeant Brandon Cox, our Senior Editor. We'd like to welcome Sergeant First Class Leighton Summerlin, Deputy Director of the Harding Project, and special guest, Sergeant Major Jorge Rivera, an instructor at the Sergeant's Major Academy, and the Contributing Editor for the NCO Journal. Today we discuss the Harding Project, what it is, and its significance to the NCO Corps. Before we kick things off, Sergeant Major Rivera, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Oh, absolutely. I was born in Chihuahua, Mexico. I grew up in California. I wanted to explore the world, so the Army gave me the opportunity. I joined the Army as an engineer, construction type. I've been in a whole lot of variety of assignments from Force Com, and TRADOC, so quite a bit of a diverse experience. I had a really good experience in the asymmetric warfare group, kind of changed my thinking about how the Army works and how to improve things. And then I went back to regular Army stuff, and now I'm here as an instructor at the Sergeant's Major Academy, hopefully giving back to the institution overall.
Thank you. Sergeant Summerlin, tell us about yourself.
So kind of like Sergeant Major Rivera, I've been pretty blessed with a pretty diverse career. Very fortunate in that, but I'm an infantryman by trade, going on 13 years, here in August. Been everything from striker to light to drill sergeant, now airborne, blue four, op four, it's been great. I couldn't do it without my wife, so I got a shout out to her. She's hands down the most supportive person I've had, and I've been very fortunate. So, grew up in California. Maybe me and Sergeant Major Rivera got to talk about that later. See what part he came from, but yeah, that's myself. And now I'm on the Harding Project.
Okay, before we get into the Harding Project, the Sergeant's Time podcast is something that when we started this podcast, we were talking to leaders at all levels and finding out what makes them tick. We give them a platform to share their knowledge, their experience, and hopefully give something to the NCO Corps that they can use out there to improve their leadership. So I'll start with you, Sergeant Major Rivera. Can you tell us what inspires you? What is your inspiration or who?
What inspires me or who inspires me? Definitely my family inspires me to be a better man. My brother has always inspired me to be a better person, to be a better human. But definitely what drives me every day, it's definitely my family. In terms of my professional life, I've had the opportunity to serve with leaders that did not exemplify professionalism, and I always wanted to be something better than that. But I also had the opportunity to serve with a lot of great leaders in different organizations, a lot of people that have made history for the United States. And so those people are the ones that inspire me to be a better professional.
What about you, Sergeant Leighton? Or Sergeant Summerlin? Leighton?
I just got done writing about this. It's going to come out in our special issue. But so it might sound a little rehearsed. So when I was a drill sergeant in 2021, we found out that my wife was pregnant with our first one. And that was a huge turning point for me. I come from a pretty sizable military family on my dad's side. And so since I was a kid, I've always wanted to join, you know, his brothers and sisters. They were all in either the Army or the Air Force. He retired after, I think, 23 years. And it goes back quite a ways. So when my wife was pregnant, it like flipped some kind of switch. And all I could think about was that, you know, if she joins the Army, which statistically speaking, there's a high chance. I mean, even my younger brother of 10 years, you know, he's in the Navy now. Like we all serve. It made me think that the people that I'm training now as a drill sergeant will one day be the leaders for her, right? Here in 18 years, 20 years. And so it drove me to work as hard as possible to make sure that they are the best soldier that they could be, because they're going to be in charge of the most important thing in my life. And so that's my inspiration is, you think about what can you do to make the Army better today? And even if it's just a little bit, well, then it's just going to be that much better for her later. So that's my biggest inspiration.
I'm going to throw y'all a curveball. Starting with you, Sergeant Major, can you tell us about, tell us a story about somebody who mentored you, a mentor that you grew up with, I guess, early on in your Army career, who inspired you?
Very early on in my career, I was a corporal recruiter under the corporal recruiter program back in 2000. So I was a very young, 20-year-old, working as a recruiter. And I thought because I was young that it was going to be easy to relate to young people. And it did, but I didn't know how to recruit. I didn't know how to be myself as a recruiter. And I struggled. I struggled really bad for the first year. I think in the first 9 months, I only put in like one or two people. It was really bad. But leadership kind of changed that. I finally got this new station commander by the name of Donald Gilbert. And he saw how much I was struggling, even though I was trying really hard, I was struggling. And he noticed what I was doing wrong, which was really about my confidence. So one day he just, pick a name. Pick a number, you call it, and I'll talk to them. And he showed me right there and then like what it's like to actually talk to people instead of going through a script. And so I started listening to him, and over the next like maybe 1 or 2 months, he really took the time to get my confidence out of myself, and stop just going through the motions, to step by step instructions and scripts, and just be myself. And I think that was a unique way of doing things and the way to get me out of myself. And so what I carry with me since that time was that he really brought out confidence in me that I didn't see before. So I was very thankful for that experience with him. There's been other mentors throughout my career here and there, but I think that when somebody talks about a mentor, I always think back to him. He was the first one that saw something in me.
Sergeant Summerlin, same question for you.
Yeah, and it's going to sound scripted because, we're here to talk about, the journals it and is. Stuff. but it, I promise it's not. So Sergeant Major Hudgens was my battalion ops sergeant major, and I was a KD complete staff sergeant. I volunteered to take the S3 NCOIC position for our battalion when I was stationed in Hohenfels. And I originally did it because I wanted to work for my old scout platoon sergeant. But then he left 2 weeks after because we got this master sergeant who was coming in to be the ops sergeant major. And that guy, he was like a belt fed 240 with everything. He talked fast. He was go, go, go. He was always on go. And I learned so much from him. But there's one story that stands out, and it's actually where my old scout platoon sergeant was in the office. He was in the three shop with us. He was having a friendly yelling argument match the way that soldiers do with Sergeant Major Hudgens about this thing that they're waving around in their hand, and turns out it's an article from Parameters. And that was really that was the second time that I'd ever – been introduced to the journals in any kind of way. But I went over there and I said, what are you guys yelling about? And he said, oh, don't worry about it, kid. You don't want to read this. And I was like, well, now I want to read it more. And so it turns out it was an article called The Army's Command Sergeant Major Problem. And it was written in 1988. And they were having a friendly debate about some of the points that it makes and versus the time frame that they were in and all kinds of stuff. It's an article that, brings up a lot of, visceral reaction in a lot of people just by the name alone. But they were having a great conversation about it, and I had joined in and, gave my 2 cents as a 8-year staff sergeant compared to those guys. But, that moment, one of the things that he told me was it's okay to think different. It's okay to push back a little bit. It's okay to that's why he liked that article, and that's why I fell in love with it as well, is because you can have an opinion and you can you know, you can voice it and you can, you know, you can be tactful, sure. But I don't know. That was a big turning point for me because it made me think different. It made me start to not question everything. That's not the point either. But just if you do have a question, like, bring it up, you know. And so ever since then, I've not had a problem voicing an opinion, even if it goes against the grain, you know, just like those two officers that wrote about the, quote, Army's Command Sergeant Major problem, you know. Like, you can only imagine how that went over then, you know. So, yeah, that's Sergeant Major Hudgens. He, you know, and that's just one example. But, yeah, he was a huge influence in my life as far as, like, you know, from a mentorship perspective.
Yeah, it's interesting to see. When I threw that question out, I'm just – what's the first thing that came to your mind? And obviously, you know, those individuals for both of you, for each of you, they obviously made an impression. Mm-hmm. And everybody has their own experience with somebody who left a big impression with them.
Yeah.
But moving on, okay. let's talk about the Harding Project, Sergeant Summerlin. Could you break it down for us? What exactly is the Harding Project, and maybe you can talk about what its significance is to the NCO Corps.
Yeah. So the Harding Project is the Chief of Staff and the SMA's initiative to renew professional discourse, primarily through writing and by revitalizing the Army's journals. So, you know, the Army has 16 professional bulletins is the technical term, but we have 16 journals that are tied to the branches or like parameters is for strategic level discussion and then NCO journal. Oftentimes is leadership broadly based on experiences that we have, things like that. But the reason that I advocate for these so much and why it's important to NCO Corps is because the enlisted population is about 80% in total. It's an experience-based corps from sergeant to command sergeant's major or to the SMA. And you think about how much experience can be shared that way. Through and immortalized in the journals, and then in return, how much you can learn from that. You know, I just brought up that example from the 1988 parameters issue, and I've had tons of discussions. I bring it up with my soldiers now, young soldiers who don't know anything about leadership in general. They're still wet behind the ears, and we have great discussions about, you know, what right looks like, and, you know, tying it to that article in some way, shape, or form about, you know, well, this is the things that they did that were good that we should still be doing now in 2024. And that's just one, like I said, that's just one example of how contributing to that body of knowledge is important, but then using that body of knowledge with your soldiers to drive further discussion and become more of an expert in either your craft or as a leader or make you think differently. Whatever it is, I mean, all of that is important to the NCO Corps, especially as we move towards a more, you know, the idea of the peer threat, right? Everybody is talking about how decisions are going to have to be made at a lower level. So you want to broaden those leaders. You want to shape their minds a little bit different. You know, you can't have lemmings. You know, you have to have people who can think, and getting them to, you know, start by reading what you guys are putting out in the NCO journal and all the other branch publications. It helps start to shape that view. And then as you move into contributing, it only gets, you know, more honed and sharpened and it makes you even better. So, so largely that's what the Harding Project is. And that's why I think it's important for the NCO Corps.
So it's about, developing warrior scholars in
yeah,
a way.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
That kind of brings to mind that there's an individual that is considered a warrior scholar, and that was General Mattis.
Yeah,
no, General Mattis.
Yeah. He talks about how important it is to read all the time. Yeah, yeah.
But he's in the Marine Corps. He is considered the mm-hmm. warrior scholar, and also probably the only general officer who never got married, which is interesting. He was devoting all his time
to
educate. Yeah, he was never married.
Interesting. He married to the Corps.
He was married to the Corps. That's correct. All Marines are.
You bring up the warrior scholar, and I remember the last time I was here at CAC. You know, I sat down with Sergeant Major Porras, and he brought up a great question when I was just explaining to him what the Harding Project is and kind of where we're trying to go and what we're trying to do. He brought up a great question that was, you know, at what level do we want people to start becoming more scholarly, and where, you know, relative to the echelon, where are they more scholarly than they are warrior, you know, and tactical fighter? And I thought about that for a long time.
It's an interesting question.
And initially, I thought he was right, you know, because he draws it out like there's a spectrum, and on one side is the warrior, and on one side, and the opposite side is the scholar. And, you know, our conversation led to, okay, well, is it a Sergeant E5 who is more warrior than scholar? And then Staff Sergeant, you know, you move a little bit closer, and then so on until you're nominative Sergeant's Major, and now it's more about being scholarly. And the more conversations that I had where I brought this up, because I was advocating for what he had talked about and, you know, trying to teach things at the right levels and make sure that, you know, whatever. But then it dawned on me that I don't know if I would subscribe to that, because what you just said is that General Mattis is a warrior scholar. They're not dichotic. They're not on the opposite ends of the spectrum. And is better than or.
Equal half.
Yeah, and is better than or, to quote Jim Collins, right? So why not be both? Yep. Like, why can't you be proficient at your task and also be scholarly?
Well, you're going to be more proficient at your task if you're more scholarly, because exactly. You've learned more and you've studied more and you've developed yourself more mentally.
Yep. Yeah. And so then you think about, you know, I'll use myself as an example, like the Infantry Branch magazine. Like, that's for my craft. So if I invest into wanting to be a more proficient infantryman and I read from this, possibly contribute, you know, it's only going to hone my skills as an infantryman and simultaneously make me more scholarly, you know, as I grow and become a better writer and better thinker. But it doesn't take away from, you know, me being a warrior still, especially at the tactical level. Like, I'm still a platoon sergeant. Like, I'm still moving squads, fighting through objectives. So I don't know. I think that we should all try to subscribe to the idea that you can be both, and that's like the ultimate goal for sure. So glad you brought that up. Sorry.
I don't mean to derail anything. No, you didn't. Absolutely not. Yeah. I thought that was a great response to something that was – sorry, Nikita, did you have something?
I was just going to say that I think that is the ultimate goal, is to have – you know, if you want to talk about warrior scholars, is to have – every soldier be a warrior scholar. The problem then becomes, though, when does the Army force that function? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where Sergeant Major Pores may have been thinking about it, because when do you start forcing this? And so as you guys are talking, I'm thinking about this. Well, it should never be a necessarily forced function. It should want to be something that every soldier strives to be.
Inspired to be.
Yeah. And so when I'm thinking about that, that only happens in the self-development section, when you start self-developing. And you can do that at every level. So I guess I had a question for each of you, and then maybe I'll pose a question, and then I'll maybe defer to you, Sergeant Sutherland, first. When did you begin your self-development process as yourself? And I'll give you my example. I started self-developing as a specialist doing correspondence courses. But it was just – I was just taking a test, seeing if I became a plumber kind of thing, you know, and hoping I did. Yeah. It wasn't true self-development.
Right.
And I think it wasn't – I wasn't doing true self-development until I was a staff sergeant. Yep. But so when did you begin your self-development, path or journey, and, you know, what set you off on that?
I can tell you exactly when it was. I was invited by my battalion commander when I was a drill sergeant to go to I'm forgetting the name, Pendleton. We were going to do like this crosstalk. We were there to see another program, and he wanted to bring some younger guys to see what we think about it. And it's this online program that, you know, you can use to like measure your peers and stuff. And then your leadership weighs in. And so it would like all feed the NCOER. We were there mainly to see that. But I spent a lot of my time just shooting the breeze with the other infantry drill sergeants and learning how they do things and talking with them. In one of the discussions that we had while we were there, there was a warrant officer. He was an infantry warrant officer, which I think is a unique take that you guys have on the Corps side. He mentioned a book, right? And so now, remember, I'm a staff sergeant at this time, and like 8 years in or so. So I wasn't like you. I didn't at least start as a specialist. I didn't start until almost this moment. We were having a conversation, and it was in between conversations where he mentions a book, and it was Tribe Something. I think I've read it now, but he mentions it, and he talks about it so highly. And fast forward, you know, it's now in the back of my mind. I had never been a reader. The joke that I always tell everybody that's 100% true and serious is that I failed junior English twice. I barely passed high school. I lied to get my way out of any writing assignment or reading assignment that I could. And so I was never a big reader, but this guy talked about a book. I get invited to go to AUSA back in 2021. And I drove from Fort Benning all the way up there. And I thought to myself, okay, let me try audio. Maybe I can just put on an audio book. It's a 12-hour drive. And maybe I can read that book that one officer was talking about. And just so happened that that audio book was 12 hours long as well. It was like a perfect fit. And so I listened to it, and I was hooked because there were so many things that resonated with me as a staff sergeant, as a leader, as a drill sergeant, especially. The book was called Tribal Leadership by Dave Logan. And I don't – to this day, I still don't think that's the book he mentioned. I actually think he was talking about Tribe by Sebastian Younger, which is also great. But that book, Tribal Leadership, you know, however I got to it, maybe it was an accident, is when I was like, that just changed my life. Like, there's a lot of things in there that resonated so well that it changed my life. And I became a bookworm. Like, I couldn't put them down. Drives my wife crazy that I listen to the audio version and every chance I get. But then I also have a different book that I'm reading, you know? So I started reading everything from like John Gordon to Simon Sinek and John C. Maxwell and James Craig's book that, you know, came out not that long ago, Atomic Habits. Like, all these self-development books. And I haven't been able to put them down. And then now, especially on the Harding Project, like, it's there's a lot of that same material coming from our soldiers that are getting put into the journals. So it's always great to read those too, because they resonate even more. So. But yeah, so I think I answered your question. I probably went a little too long.
No, for sure.
That was when I started. It was later. I wish I had been a specialist. I can only imagine how different I'd be. But yeah, I was a staff sergeant. I was a drill sergeant.
Sorry, Major. I'll shoot that same question to you.
One day I began my development process. I'll tell you, very early on, and it wasn't to develop myself. It was out of curiosity. I hated when people would tell me that's not how we do things, or you can't do that because it's not allowed, or it's against regulations. And I never knew where they were coming up with these answers, because they couldn't tell me what is not allowing me to do something or what's preventing us from doing something else. So out of curiosity and I guess stubbornness, I started reading a lot of Army doctrine just to prove other people wrong. And that kind of helped me understand Army doctrine better and how the Army works a little better. So that's where it began. It began very, very early on, maybe a PFC or so. From there, it just continued to improve as I moved up in positions. There was other requirements, other things that were expected of me. So I would do a lot of homework to make sure that when things happen, I knew what I needed to do. As a young electrician, I didn't believe that the Army taught me everything there was to know about being an electrician. So I took some Vo-Tech classes and realized that I just wasted my time, because the Army did teach me everything I needed to know about being an electrician. But even though it was the same stuff, it kind of resonated to me that the Army is teaching me the right things that I need to know. It kind of brought in that confidence that I need to have. But yeah, for doctrine, it was just being stubborn and people telling me that is not allowed. So I needed to understand what reality was.
Well, I wanted to bring that up because I wanted people to realize that there's different reasons why people get to that point.
Yeah.
But it's important that you get to that point.
Right.
And the sooner you do it, man, so much, you know, I'm trying to tell Sergeant Cox here, you got to read doctrine. You got to read, you know, you got to
read it
up,
all, man.
Yeah. You got to understand, you know, difference between policy, doctrine, and and it's just going to empower you. Yep. I felt empowered once I started reading doctrine. It made me move up with against my peers. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It set me apart. But then it started that that creative thinking process for me, that critical thinking, and I just longed to be like a, you know, not a scholar. I never thought about it that way, a scholar, but just a somebody that's a lifelong learner.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, absolutely.
And then all those things, you know, I took communications classes. I said on finishing my bachelor's degree, and I'm taking all these communication classes that are that I think I'm going to be a better communicator with my family, mm-hmm. the people I care about, you know, my friends, family. And so just self-development has set me on this new path where I'm learning so much, and it's just I feel empowered by it.
Yeah, and now we look at guys like, you know, Sergeant Cox or, you know, Specialist Cox, you know, and you're like, you need to start now, man. You just got to start. Yeah.
I think that's the main message here is that it's you need to do it sooner rather than later.
Yes.
Don't take it for granted. Expect that, oh, you know what, I'll do it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow's another day, and then tomorrow becomes, you know, before you know it, it's going to be, you know, years pass by, years. And you're going to be passed up by your peers. So it's important to not just sit on your laurels. You need to get out there and do it. You need to develop yourself.
Kind of a good segue into like what we're doing, right? You know, the journals are there for that, right? They are there for the development of others. So then, you know, like we talked about before we started recording is, you know, how do you get Specialist Cox, right? Not Staff Sergeant Cox. Staff Sergeant Cox, he might have a little bit more vested interest in reading from Army Communicator or Infantry Magazine, you know, whatever it is. But how do you get like the guys that are really wet behind the ears to be interested? And, you know, so right now, one of the big things that we're working on, and you might even be able to speak more to this than I could, just being on the inside track for Line of Departure, you know, the website that's coming out, that's going to be web first, mobile friendly, and consolidate all of these journals and, you know, great venues that the Army has under one umbrella that, that a young soldier can get to on their phone versus, you know, trying to find the 1991 NCO journal issue on DVIDs. You know, it's just, that's not a place that guys are going to go look for it. You know, they're not going to seek out that self-development, especially if we make it harder, right? So the whole goal of Line of Departure is to make it more accessible, and try to bring it to the term that Colonel Griffiths is coining, or I don't remember if it was him or Captain Lipsky, but the scrolling soldier, you know. So if you're trying to meet them where they're at and you're trying to get them into the self-development stage, you know, state of mind early, then you got to put the great content that's coming out from you guys and everybody else, you know, on the phone. And so that's one of the main efforts that we're working on. And during the workshop tomorrow, you know, we'll talk more about it.
Bring up a good point that I kind of like to talk about. And one thing that we all have in common, right, is we were all junior enlisted at one point in time.
Yes.
And I think, at least from my experience, it may not have been pitched or promoted in the way that it should have been. So I think that it's interesting. And you were talking about how you did correspondence courses, and that's how you got, I mean, I did the same thing, but I would say that I first started to delve into regulations was just because we used to study those things to make sure that we were doing the right thing, so we didn't get in trouble.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
So that was probably my first. And then from there, you know, I have a better understanding of where to find this stuff. But I think that the journals are a great resource that I didn't even know about. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe some of the people we really need to target are the squad leaders or platoon sergeants that can be the pillar, right? And they can say, hey, I learned this because of this.
Yep.
You need to do this. Mm-hmm. Sometimes just telling a private, hey, I want you to find me an article by the end of the day and tell me why it's cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that could really instill some of that or empower them, yep. I think.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, but they also don't, right? We just talked about when I really got into it was the staff sergeant.
Yeah.
You know, 8 years, 10 years in, so you know, we need to get it.
Yeah. So so to your point, you know, I think you know, awareness is a big part of it. Just knowing that they exist to begin with. You know, I was just telling Chago before you guys showed up that, you know, one of the things that I think could help a lot is for the publications that are still gonna print, you know, where you put that print matters a lot. You know, if it sits on the coffee table out here in the Eisenhower Hall, like does that reach those, you know, does it reach Private Cox? And is it going to pique your interest there? It's not going to, you know, if it sits on a shelf at staff duty and you don't have NCOs that are, you know, like you said, making somebody read it, if they don't even know about it to begin with. So when it comes to the print stuff, if the branch journals are still going to print, man, I argue, let's put them in the basic training bays. You know what I mean? Like, think about if you – what's your MOS, Cox?
Public affairs now.
Oh, okay.
What was aviation?
Your aviation before. Yeah. So imagine if Aviation Digest had – a copy of Aviation Digest had been in your bay, right, alongside – and alongside all the other ones, right, because you probably went to basic with multiple – different MOSs, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So you've got Army Communicator in there. You've got Engineer and so on and so forth. Like, would you have read it?
Oh, yeah, I would have read it.
You would have read it because, like you said, you don't have your phones. You know, you're just,
yeah.
Man, I got, like, well, let me see this. Oh, that one applies to me. I'm in the aviation field. Like,
yeah.
And, yeah, so I'm trying to work with the Infantry Journal right now, and we're going to see how that goes and see if we can get those in the bays rather than on the coffee tables where they don't get read.
Well, you know, part of the challenge of that too is making it not just accessible but readable.
Yes.
That's relatable. Because if you put something in there that's way over their heads, that's why one of the things that we focus on here in the NCO Journal is to publish articles that are quick to read, that are engaging, mm-hmm. that carry some sort of message or question or whatever the case may be. And then we discuss it on our podcast, on a regular podcast, not the Sergeant's Time podcast we're on right now. So it's important that it be however long it needs to be. That's one of the things I always tell all the authors. Well, how long does it need to be? It should be a quick read, but it needs to be as long as it needs to be for you to make your point.
Right.
If you don't,
that's one.
Yeah, go ahead, Sergeant Major.
Yeah, that's one of the things I really liked about the Preventive Maintenance magazine, the little comic book.
Yes, magazine, yeah.
Yeah, so that one was like, it was like tidbits on maintenance on your gun, on your wheels, on your truck. And it was one page or three pages, but it was just enough information for a soldier to be able to understand and apply right away. And they were all over the motor pool.
And they had pictures.
Yeah.
Jokes. That'll draw you in. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It was sad to see them go. You're tracking they left, right, Sergeant Major?
Yeah, I do. Okay. I was sad when I read that.
But I think to the point, I think, you know, we have authors that are listening to this podcast too, or, you know, NCOs that are future writers. I think it's important that even big, you know, strategic level type of topics can be discussed and can be understood by people that don't have that a lot of experience or knowledge on that, as long as they have a way that they say it in a certain way. And I'll give you an example. You can give an in-depth explanation of something, but if you go in and you put in a realistic example or story of how that applies, it makes it so much easier to comprehend.
Yeah,
kind of like we did at the beginning.
Yeah.
Like we did at the beginning of this podcast, where I asked you guys, you know, tell me a story about an NCO who, you know, who made an impression on you. And that, yeah. I think the stories are what carry the message in a way that's more palatable, you know, that easier to absorb, easier to consume. And then, you know what, if you don't draw your reader into whatever it is you're writing, they're not going to read there. If it's dry and not interesting at the beginning, they're not going to go through the rest and consume whatever message you're getting out.
Yeah.
So you have to make it interesting. You have to draw them in. And the best way to do it is just like Sergeant Nikita said, is to, you know, put it in a story format, in a way that just kind of draws you in, not just as a soldier, but as a person. You know, you can use emotions, you can use whatever you want, you know, just draw the reader in.
Yeah.
It's important.
I'd love to hear Sergeant Major Rivera's thoughts on this, but I get questions sometimes about, you know, how do I write an article, and what's the difference between that and like the academic essay that I had to write for my PME course? And in our professional discourse how-to guide that's coming out, you know, quick plug, right?
Of course.
Yeah. It's going to come out in August. We have a contributor who wrote about, you know, how do I convert my PME essay to an article. And that drove a lot of good discussion that I share with people now, where it's like, you can take all the facts from there, put it, but the way that you convert it over is that there's a hook, right? Because an academic essay 9 times out of 10 won't have a hook. It'll just have an intro. And I try to remind people that those are two different things. So you have a hook, you have, you know, the problem that you see or the message that you want to convey, It's in a relatable format, which is where the story comes in, and then a call to action. Or I personally think that they should all have a call to action. I mean, because you can write something that's just informative. You know, maybe you're just trying to add to the conversation, whatever that is. But I prefer the call to action where it's like, well, now, okay, Akite just read this. What do I want him to do now right. with all that information, right? And how do I want you to help solve this problem? Or, you know, maybe I bring up something that we need to further discuss and, you know, whatever it is.
Well, I'd like to hear what Sergeant Major.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I don't know. I'm barely starting at this editor thing, but I think you got it right. The essay is going to be very specific to meeting requirements that somebody set up for you, whereas an article is going to be your story of that topic, right? So you're not writing for a grade or a rubric. You're writing for another human being who's going to read your paper. So I think those three things that you laid out, the hook, the relatable format, the call to action, I think those are spot on. Last week I edited another paper about EFMP, and it had almost everything except for that call to action or what do the soldiers need to take away from this article. It was great. It was a great examples. It had a really good thesis, and it laid out everything very systematically. But at the end, I was like, what do you want the soldiers to be able to get out of this other than your story, right? So we went back to the editor, to the author, and she made some changes. And the second time it was perfect. It was great because it had that call to action. This is what people at this office need to do. This is what soldiers should be able to do. Like, it was great. So I think what you laid out is perfect. Just remembering that when you're writing an article, you're writing for a human who's going to read the content instead of somebody who's going to rate it. And I think that's where I make the distinction here at the Academy is to the students is you're not writing for your grade in terms of the NCR journal. You're writing to make an impact to other people. So that's the differentiation I think we try to make. Hopefully that helps you out.
Yeah. Right. It's got to have personality. Like, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if I can do it, my own plug, and that's where the NCO Journal can help out too. We have a great team of contributing editors. They have a lot of experience in writing and reading different articles. And that's where you can get a lot of that help. One of the things that I was thinking as we were discussing was this. I remember you get put in this hall or whatever. And it's like, hey, we need to sign up for AER. It's a Friday. 5 o'clock, and so we're just gonna let you all stand here or whatever. You know what they were trying to do? They were trying to get people to contribute. But the reason I bring that up is because it was a time that I enjoyed as a young private, because it was a lot of NCOs talking story. We just say talking story and just talking about their experiences, training, and different things like that, and I enjoyed that time. And now I'm thinking, it's like, that's all we need. We just need storytellers. Storytellers that tell their experience, and they just got to get somebody to help them write it. Or if you have, a lot of information written down, find a storyteller, somebody that talks story well, and they can help you. Hey, I would do this. I would do that. Have them read your article.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just get advice that way.
Am I allowed to present a call to action here on the NCO Journal podcast?
Knock yourself out, friend.
Do it.
the model that you guys have set up, the partnership that you have between the Sergeant Major's Academy and the NCO Journal, I think, when you guys first told me about that, I knew that this was like another, medium to small sized line of effort that could have a major impact, because you guys have shown that it can be successful. It helps with throughput. You have senior leaders that are giving eyes on these pieces and they're able to challenge it. And if I sit there and say that, well, the Army needs a system that helps soldiers with financial problems, that are in a financial crisis, then you, as the sergeant major who reviews it, is going to be like, yeah, we have that. It's called AER, and that's how you help people, right? But that model in general, I think, is so important to normalizing professional discourse across the Army, because right now, when we travel and we talk to soldiers, it's regarded as this academic thing that officers do, and maybe some NCOs do because they're trying to get a bullet on their NCOR. When in reality, what it's designed for is to help spur discussions that make change, either in somebody's life as a leader or a family member, you know, whatever it is, or it helps drive change in doctrine or policy, or it establishes a TTP for somebody else, or it relates as a story that helps, you know, I don't know, maybe prevent suicide, you know, whatever it might be. When it comes to normalizing professional discourse across the Army and getting away from that stigma that it is only for officers and it's only for this, you know, niche group of people, this very small group of people, I view that partnership as part of that process. In practice, what I'm talking about is, you know, if the Infantry Magazine were to set up something similar at EMCO, you know, the Maneuver Center of Excellence, they're right down the hall from the Triple C course, you know, and it's like that's a great place to try to stand up a similar program where you have people who are vested in that particular branch, right? These are Captain Career Course instructors. They know the ins and outs, and as stuff gets fed up, they can help provide expertise. And it just helps normalize writing, the journals, professional discourse writ large in a different way. And then you can take it to the NCO side where right down the street they have the NCO Academy, and you can have ALC and SLC instructors who are also volunteer contributors. And it just helps kind of push the tentacles of professional discourse into all these other little places that can have a huge impact, and which leads to more contribution. It leads to more readership. And like we talked about, you know, a couple times now, is that with all that comes more impact, you know, and more impact in people's lives, more impact, like General George talks about with his training management piece, becoming a better company commander that way. You know, or even if it's just experiential, where you guys published an article not that long ago that was recognized by General George. It was My Time on Top, and it was about a first launch experience as an MP in his company. And somebody who reads that, who, you know, maybe somebody's about to go take a first launch spot in whatever, you know, and maybe he's an MP, maybe he's not. He can learn from that guy's experience. And so all that to say that I think that the partnership that you guys have is great. And I think it's another, thing that the rest of the branch journals should really consider adopting, as a way to try to normalize professional discourse and inject the journals, you know, wherever you're at, whatever COE you belong to, into your career field and your soldiers within it, just a little bit more. It's like a net positive. The contributors gain a lot of self-development from it. You know, I mean, maybe Sergeant Major Rivera would say otherwise. My guess is no. It benefits them. It benefits the journals. It benefits the institution. So, yeah.
I think what you're saying is absolutely critical. As instructors at any of the schoolhouses, right, centers of excellence, as instructors, we should be the subject matter experts on whatever topic right. that we're teaching. You bring that a little further out in the COEs and the centers of excellence. You're talking about doctrine writers. So if we have NCOs and officers being doctrine writers, being the subject matter experts, then they should be also contributing to these other things that are also informing people. Not just the people that are coming through to the PME. And so using the subject matter experts as writers to kind of get the word out to the wider audience is absolutely perfect. And also improves that person, right, as a subject matter expert. If you have an expertise, I think a lot of the times when I write, I become better at whatever topic I'm writing about because I'm getting my thoughts together. I'm getting all the ideas that were kind of randomized in my head are not getting organized and making more sense as I write, and especially after every iteration of improvement of the editing process. It just helps me understand the topic better. So writing would definitely make those subject matters experts even better. So what you're saying is absolutely spot on.
So that brings us to the question, the age-old question like to ask. The question.
Our final question.
Yeah, the final question.
I forgot the question.
So I'll say it. I wanted to ask you all if you had an opportunity to advise your younger self, whatever age that could be, you know, where you were a private or specialist, what advice would you give yourself? We can start off with Sergeant Major.
You don't know it all, and that's okay. That's what I would say. I think I had a similar experience as Sergeant Summerlin, that as a high school student, I was a horrible student. I did not write. I did not read. I don't know how I graduated, but I'm here. But I hated reading and I hated writing. Luckily, I also found audiobooks, and I found that that is the way I can absorb information that doesn't take me hours to read three pages. So I think I'm not the only one that struggles in reading, but definitely audiobooks. If I had known that that was an option earlier on, even with cassettes or CDs back in the 1900s, I would have done that, right? Now it's everything so accessible in our phones with different apps, and public libraries and army libraries have accounts. And so it's so easy and free that you can just listen to books over and over again. So I would say read and write more. Definitely read more, because the more you expose yourself to different ideas and different perspectives, your own self kind of evolves from being stagnant to the world is available to you. So definitely read and write more is what I would tell myself.
Dude, there's so much I would tell myself.
Yeah. This year, bet on this team.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And maybe it's because we're talking about it now, but I think I would side with Sergeant Major Rivera, where I wish I had started reading sooner. You know, I would have started writing sooner, and, you know, you can feel the exponential growth. And, I mean, I don't want to just like piggyback off of what he said, but he's right. So, I would say the same thing. It's like, you know, start reading, start writing. And, you know, one of my big issues with writing was always, especially in school, that's why I'm not kidding when I say that I lied and schemed my way out of any writing assignment. But I was always upset because of this idea that, you know, a key take and write a paper and submit it to our teacher Cox over here, and you might get an A. Mine might look almost the exact same, have the same amount of grammatical errors, but I get a C. And the subjectivity of it, it always bothered me so much. What it does do is it gives you a great foundation that I am still lacking today. I have a lot of friends who help me. But writing for the journals or even our Substack, you know, like when it's an article format, like we talked about before, where it's got personality and it's based on your experience, which of course I didn't have then. You know, I'm only able to write about that now because I've gone through 13 years of Army experience. What I have learned is that when you write that way, it's less about the subjectivity of an academic essay from your teacher, right? Because you're just trying to tell a story. You're trying to resonate with somebody. You're trying to get an experience out there to try to help and shape somebody else's mind, you know? And so that has been really, really fun and really cool. So I all that to say, yes, I wish I would have told myself to pay attention in school, read more, write more.
You know, I wanted to extend that same question, by the way, to Sergeant Akite. He's going to be leaving us fairly soon here. And I think it's important that tell us, Sergeant Akite, what kind of advice would present day you have for young specialist or Sergeant Akite?
I think the way that we start this conversation off is really important and impactful. You know, we start by asking what inspires you. So I would say find something that inspires you and learn how to get to that point and do the best that you can for it. In my case, I would say my faith, my family, my friends, that's what kind of inspires me, drives me to be better, to do the best that I can. And if I had focused on that, I could have avoided so many things in my life and my career. And so I think to my younger self, I would emphasize that.
Thank you for that. Thank you for joining us. Stay tuned for more interesting guests and inspiring conversations right here at the NCO Journal. Submit your articles, get published. Don't forget to visit our webpage and follow us on social media. We'll see you next time on the Sergeant's Time Podcast.